You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those listening live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That, of course, goal scored earlier by Jacob Trouba. Still no word on his contract status, no news on his contract negotiations, but we will get into that throughout the course of the program today. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, in studio is my colleague Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Ezzy, before we get into the Winnipeg Jets, how was the fishing trip last week?
Well, actually, I'll get into the fishing trip in a second here.
Okay.
But before we even get into the fishing trip and then we get into the Jets, JC LaPon, big Sean Monahan contract, I want to wish a very special happy birthday to my nephew Hunter. He's 7 today.
Ah, happy birthday, Hunty.
Happy birthday, Hunts, yeah. And I hope you have a great day. So I had to get that in right off the bat.
That's absolutely allowed. You're allowed to be a good uncle and wish your nephew a happy birthday.
Yeah.
Would you buy him for his birthday?
I can't say that on air. He's listening.
Okay, fair enough. I can appreciate that. And or you have to go to Toys R Us right after the show and pick him out again.
No, I've got the present, okay. And I'm going to give it to my nephew after the show. There's a little birthday party that we have planned at Assiniboine Park. It's going to be
a lovely day.
Fantastic. You asked about the fishing, Drew.
Yeah. You missed last week's show, of course. You subjected me to 2 hours worth of Remus, where he constantly called me Hustler for the entire 2 hours.
Did he actually?
Like 6 times he called me Huss.
It's funny because
he could have called, you know, if he had just gone with Andrew, that's fine. We both have the first name of Andrew. Instead, he just called me Huss over and over and over and over and over and over again.
You know, it's a little bit understandable, Drew, because, you know, Remus spends a lot of time at the radio station and, you know, he might be a little bit tired on Saturdays, but you'd think for a guy who got his start with Illegal Curve back when we were on Red River Radio, you'd think that he would know who you are. And also, we're all friends, and Remus knows you, and he's known you for 10, 15 plus years.
Yeah, 20, think that 25 would, years, something like that. Do you think he might be able to remember my name? But no, apparently, is the answer to that.
Back to the fishing trip, though. You know me. I'm not a big fisherman.
No, not a big. You eat a lot of fish, but you're not a big fisherman.
But going to Quesnel Lake Caribou Lodge, and shout out to the people there. It was absolutely fantastic. You know, we went out for 2 nights.
Mm-hmm.
The fishing was excellent. My girlfriend Naomi is really into fishing, and she's gotten me into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I actually caught the biggest walleye of the day, 24.5 inches.
Congratulations. That's a good-sized walleye.
Rory would be proud of me.
Did you guys do shore lunch? Did you, like, you know, fry it up right there, or do you do catch-and-release fishing?
Well, one of the
I know nothing about fishing.
We were in conservation water, so you actually have to throw in anything. Well, when it comes to pickerel, walleye, same thing, right?
Yes,
they call
course.
Walleye in the
depends
U.S.
Depends if you're on which side of the border you're on.
Right. Uh-huh. And when you're talking about conservation waters, Drew, you actually have to throw in any pickerel that's above 17 and a half inches.
So if it's an especially large pickerel, you have to throw it back.
It used to be apparently by weight.
Ah.
Now it's by length.
Length.
So I think we caught, you know, something like 20 or 25. There were 6 of us there.
Okay.
And so one of the guys who, it was his birthday, shout out to Bo.
Yeah.
It was his 40th birthday. He actually was the one who filleted all the fish, and everybody went home with a nice bag of fish.
That's lovely. And then you went to McDonald's and ordered a number of fillet of fish as well.
Yes. Yeah. All I eat is fish now. What's it called? Pescatarian?
You're a pescatarian, yes. Yeah. The only thing you eat is fish and vegetables, yes.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I went to McDonald's last night.
And did you order a fillet of fish?
No, I didn't. But
you
it
ordered
was,
a double Big Mac.
It was one of those lonely trips to, you know, like I was by myself. I was having a nice quiet Friday night preparing for the show.
Uh-huh. Hang on. Let me interrupt you before you continue. What time did you go to McDonald's? And was this your second dinner?
No, it wasn't my second dinner, Drew, but it was around, I'd say, 9:30. And I got to tell you something. There's nothing better.
It's 9:30 because you came home from work and took a nap, right?
No nap.
No nap, huh?
I actually was wrapping my nephew's present. And doing a little yard work.
You worked up an appetite, so you had to go get some McDonald's.
And I was watching the Olympics. I was watching the 4x100 relay while eating my McChicken.
You watched these peak physical, these athletes in peak physical condition and decided what I really need to mimic them is some McDonald's and some French fries.
By the way, I think Rory's going to have to get the Heart and Stroke Foundation on the line here.
Well, you were saying off air that you know your girlfriend Naomi's away, so you've been eating the bachelor diet.
I call it the trifecta.
The trifecta. Okay.
It's Domino's, Subway, McDonald's.
Now, all on the same night or different nights altogether?
No, that was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night.
Okay.
I mean, I did get some vegetables in there. I ate a little bit of zucchini and
yeah. The lettuce on your Big Mac doesn't count as a vegetable, but it's
a nice
idea. No, it doesn't. No doctor counts that as a vegetable whatsoever.
I just because it's processed and it's not actually nutritious.
And it's shredded head lettuce that has zero nutritional value whatsoever.
That's a good point.
Yeah, anyways. Okay, I'm glad that you're here, and you know, hopefully Naomi comes back soon so your arteries don't literally burst on air. That would be unfortunate for everybody.
Yeah, I definitely need to get a gym membership stat.
Uh-huh, that would be... I'm surprised, because usually you had 3 gym memberships and used none of them.
Yeah, so but at least I had them in my wallet, the option. Now I have no options. Like, now it's just basically like...
That's right. When you have the heart attack and collapse on the ground and the EMTs come to deal with you and they open up your wallet, they can see, oh, this guy has 3 gym memberships. He obviously did not use any of them.
Now I just have Domino's coupons and old Subway stamps.
That's old Subway stamps. I haven't had Subway stamps in 20 years, but you got them. Don't worry. That's good. Now that we've through with your health, let's get to the Winnipeg Jets. Again, no real news on Jacob Trouba. We'll get a little bit of news, but not a ton in terms of
contract. And we're not surprised at all, Drew.
No, still no reason. I said it last week. Today's August 20th. There is no reason to really do anything, either until the World Cup of Hockey starts or right after the World Cup of Hockey ends, if that's what the target date they're looking at. The Jets do come to terms with their second remaining restricted free agent. That's J.C. LaPon. He signs a 1-year, 2-way deal with the Jets. This happened way back on Monday morning. He got some action in with the team last year, his first regular season action. He had 9 games with the Jets. Racked up 1 assist. He's a former third-round pick back in 2013. With the Moose, certainly played more games there, 45 games with the Moose, 13 goals and 17 assists. So he was a key offensive member of the Manitoba Moose. I think J.C. LaPon is probably one of those tweeners that's on the Jets roster. He's going to need a tremendous training camp, I would suggest, to make the big club. But if he's not, he'll go back to the Moose, and he'll be one of the guys who will probably be a first call-up if the Jets need somebody from the AHL system.
Yeah, Drew, and I've always been a big fan of J.C. LaPon. If you've listened to the show before, I'm always a big fan of those fourth-line grinders, the guys that can drop the gloves. And as you mentioned, J.C. LaPon got into his first 9 NHL games, picked up an assist, but played most of the season with the Manitoba Moose. And you're right, Drew, when you consider that the Jets probably have the best forward depth that they've ever had heading into the season, It's going to be very hard for J.C. LaPon to make the team. Not to say that he can't make the team out of training camp, but he's going to be competing against guys, especially bringing in a guy like Sean Mathias, who's most likely going to be on the third line, might be on the fourth line, but He's going to have to bump out, whether it's a Andrew Kopp, a Chris Thorburn, a Joel Armia. You're going to have guys like Brendan Lemieux, Nick Petan also competing for a fourth line spot. So
Brandon Tanev, Marc Giordano, all these guys who are, the Jets have battles, training camp battles, as we've talked about really since, way back in, June or July. They're going to have a significant number of training camp battles for those bottom, for spots on the bottom 6, let's say. And, Paul Maurice is going to, I suspect he'll just go with the hot hand. You're playing well, you're going to get time. You're not playing well, you're going to go down.
And you know what I like about J.C. LaPon? If you ask anybody, and Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com would mention this, he wasn't, a top scorer. I think he was something like 7th or 8th on the team in scoring. But if you ask
anybody. The Moose, you're saying.
The Moose.
Yeah.
And anybody would say that he was still an integral part of this team. And sure, the Moose weren't a very good team this year. But what I love about J.C. LaPon, it was a guy that was passed over in the draft twice. Mm-hmm. And as an overager in the WHL for the Kamloops Blazers, he was one of the top scorers in the WHL. He was a third-round pick of the Jets. He's always a guy that seems to defy expectations. He's a guy that everybody kind of has penciled in as most a fourth-liner at the NHL level. And it's possible, Drew, that he does project as a third- or fourth-liner at the NHL level, but needless to say, every time you watch him play, he seems to have an impact on the ice. He's a guy that will make a big body check, or he'll have an impact. He can drop the gloves. He always seems to do something when he's on the ice, and to be honest with you, further down the road, let's say if a guy like Chris Thorburn is not re-signed after this coming season, I think a guy like J.C. LaPon would be a great guy for the fourth line.
Well, you know, J.C. LaPon, you know, is he's not going to light it up offensively at the NHL level at any point in his career. I don't think anybody would expect that. But he's going to be a guy that when he's on the ice, you're going to notice him or you're going to feel him because he needs to – that's how he needs to make his impact.
But you know what, though, Drew? He does – he can score, and sure, if that means that most he ever gets at the NHL level is 20 points, that's fine. But if you look at his stats in his final year in the WHL, I think he was something like 100 points.
Look, he had 13 goals and 30 points in only 45 games for the Moose last year. So he was obviously able to put up offensive numbers at the AHL level.
Right.
I don't expect that's going to translate to be a, like you said, I don't expect he's going to be a 40-point guy at the NHL level at any point in his career, but the Jets probably aren't relying him on that. They're relying on him to go out there and to be responsible when he's on the ice and to go out there and agitate and to go out there and, you know, at least physically make some sort of impact when he's on the ice, be it at the NHL level, but at the Manitoba Moose level, they would probably hope that he's going to continue on the offensive path. You know, 30 points in 45 games at any level of hockey isn't something to just, you know, ignore altogether. It means you were able to do something offensively.
Right. It was actually 89 points in his last year in the WHL for J.C. LaPon. But needless to say, Drew, the difference between the Jets now and 3 years ago is a guy like J.C. LaPon doesn't have to be rushed. Yeah. And we talked about this last year. I thought Andrew Kopp was maybe rushed a little bit and should have spent a year in the AHL, but the Jets obviously made the decision that they wanted Andrew Kopp to center that fourth line. But needless to say, guys like Brendan Lemieux, Nick Petan, J.C. LaPon, if these guys have to spend one more year in the AHL, or in Brendan Lemieux's case, 1 year in the AHL, that's not a bad thing because there's just so much depth right now with guys like Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor coming into the lineup, and then guys like Joel Armia and Marco Dano just fighting for bottom six roles, right? So it's not necessarily a bad thing if these guys have to spend 1 year in the AHL and they put up better point totals, they play on the first line, and then next year, the 2017-18 season, then they start to come into the NHL and play on the third and fourth line of the Jets.
As we have said from the start, it's a good problem to have a lot of depth, to have guys battling for playing time, battling for positions. This is a good problem for the Winnipeg Jets to have. A not so good problem, maybe, depends on your point of view, is the fact that Jacob Trouba is not yet under contract with the Winnipeg Jets. It was confirmed earlier in the week by Trouba's agent, Kurt Overhart, that even if Trouba does not have a contract by the time the World Cup of Hockey rolls around in September, as he has been, of course, named to the Team North America under-23 squad, he is going to go and play for that team regardless of his contract status. He will go out and between the NHL and the NHLPA and maybe Trouba himself, he'll go out and buy insurance on in case of an injury. Do you think the Jets and do you think Trouba, you know, we saw with Sean Monahan, he wanted to get the contract done before the World Cup started. He said, I'm not going to negotiate during the World Cup. Do you think Trouba and the Jets are sort of might be taking a similar tact, or do you think they really care if it drags on past the World Cup of Hockey?
I think there definitely, Drew, might be some type of deadline hunting here, and I think that both sides would probably prefer that a contract was signed before the World Cup. By the way, I personally do believe that Jacob Trouba will be signed before the World Cup. That's just, you know, our personal opinion. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about Sean Monahan, we probably knew that he was going to be the first player signed. And when you're talking about Johnny Gaudreau, I think you could argue that Johnny Gaudreau might make more than Sean Monahan. Definitely drew a similar amount that Sean Monahan is making, and he got a nice 7-year deal. But when you're talking about these types of players, they all have a common thread. They're all guys that are coming out of their entry-level contract, right? So whether you're talking about Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Jacob Trouba, or you're talking about Rasmus Ristolainen, who's also an RFA, or you're talking about Ryan Strome, or you're talking about Hampus Lindholm. By the way, a lot of these defensemen are drafted from that 2012 draft when you're talking about Trouba and Hampus Lindholm. But when you're talking about these guys, these are all guys that are either going to be playing in the World Cup, because when you're talking about Lindholm, he was picked to the team, and Rasmus Ristolainen was picked to the Finnish team, and Nikita Kucherov is the other player that I didn't mention. He was on the Russian team. He's going to play. So there's, I believe, 5 or 6 guys that are going to play in the World Cup that don't have contracts. And to be honest with you, I don't have a problem with it, but I think the agent and the player are definitely putting themselves at a major risk. If these guys get injured, sure, they're insured. I understand that.
It's not the same, though.
But they're going to definitely hurt their chances of necessarily signing a long-term contract. I think with the exception of maybe one or two players, all of these players are looking at 6 or 7 year deals.
I don't disagree with you what you said there at all. And I think that what you know, the first few weeks of August in the NHL world are the quietest in the course of the season. I mean, most general managers, most agents, most players, everybody is away. Everybody is on taking their last little holiday before the stretch run of the season starts.
And that's why we always take the August long weekend off, because you know, it's after free agency. It's before
a quiet
training
time.
Camp start.
It's certainly a quiet time. I expect, you know, to your point about, you know, with the World Cup of Hockey coming up very shortly and training camp just around the corner, you know, you're going to see more and more guys skating at the, you know, the Winnipeg guys are going to be filtering into town and they're going to be skating at the Iceplex and everything else along those lines. You're going to see negotiations sort of, I think, kickstart for Jacob Trouba and a lot of his other ilk, particularly with the World Cup of Hockey coming up. I suspect this week and next week is going to be, you're going to see more movement. You already saw it started with the Sean Monahan contract yesterday, which we'll talk about next segment, but you're going to start seeing things, I think, maybe get started again. There was no need to negotiate the first week of August. As you get closer to the end of August and the beginning of September, I think these negotiations will get a little bit more serious again.
Drew, I know we got to go to break here, but I'll say this much. I would expect most of these players to sign by the time the World Cup starts. So I would expect Johnny Gaudreau, Nikita Kucherov, Jacob Trouba, Rasmus Ristolainen, Ryan Strome, all of these guys. Ryan Strome's not playing in the World Cup, I don't believe, but needless to say, I think most of these players don't want to let it linger, because after the World Cup ends, it's going to be a very short period between when the World Cup ends and then when the NHL season starts.
You're absolutely right about that, and we'll talk more about the remaining RFAs throughout the NHL throughout the course of the program. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the two big signings yesterday. Sean Monahan signs up in Calgary, and Jimmy VC sweepstakes comes to an end, thank God. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
The Flames have it. Here comes Goodrow with his magic save. Rebound, score! Monahan! Gets some outstanding stick handling by Johnny Gaudreau, who loves to go through the middle even though he's the smallest guy on the ice. He does everything but finish it. But Monahan comes in and says, I'll give you a hand here.
Sean Monahan signs a big 7-year, $44.625 million contract with the Calgary Flames yesterday afternoon. It comes in at $6.375 million per season. Monahan, of course, a former first-round pick of the Flames back in 2013, sixth overall, had his career year last year with 63 points in 81 games, and he gets rewarded handsomely as a result. No surprise, of course, that Monahan gets, re-signs in Calgary. Any surprise to you regarding the terms of the contract? Right around there, the Scheifele amount. Scheifele obviously 6.125. Gets a little more than Nathan MacKinnon does, $75,000 more annually than Nathan MacKinnon, the former first overall pick, gets. This is a reasonable contract, as far as you can tell.
Yeah, absolutely, Drew. And I'm a huge fan of Monahan, and I don't think you're going to find too many people that aren't a fan of Sean Monahan. I mean, this guy is an excellent player, comes into the NHL at 18 years old, and he's already an impact player basically as soon as he enters the NHL. And I think what's interesting about this contract, I think it's probably where it should be. I think you could make an argument that Sean Monahan is slightly better than Mark Scheifele, considering that Sean Monahan was drafted 2 years after Mark Scheifele. Mark Scheifele had to spend a couple more years in Barrie of the OHL, whereas Sean Monahan stepped right into the Calgary Flames. And you could argue that maybe Sean Monahan was rushed a little bit, but when you look at how he performed in his rookie year, and especially the last couple years.
Yeah, 62 points 2 years ago, 63 points this past year.
Right.
31 goals 2 years ago, 27 goals. So this is a bona fide scorer in the NHL.
Yeah, Drew, and similar to Mark Scheifele, I think you're looking at a guy that hasn't reached his offensive potential. Like, when I look at a guy like Monahan, I see potentially 90 points in Sean Monahan, just like Mark Scheifele. I could see Mark Scheifele getting up to 80 points. And what's interesting here is now the Calgary Flames have $8 million, just over $8 million left under the cap, $8.5 million, and they have to sign Johnny Gaudreau. And you got to think Johnny Gaudreau is going to get, if not the exact same term, he's probably going to get a little bit more. So I think you could be expecting maybe even as high as $7 million for Johnny Gaudreau, right? Because when you're talking about these two players, this is their dynamic duo. And then you throw in Sam Bennett, and then the fact that Matthew Tkachuk could even make the team this year. And if he doesn't make the team this year, he's certainly going to be in the NHL the year after this year, right? So you're looking at a team that has arguably the best group of forwards, with the exception of maybe the Jets, the Oilers.
There's
and
a lot of
other
similarities
teams
between the Flames and the Jets in that, you know, they have a lot of young offensive talent. The Jets
very good
have
group
lot,
of defensemen.
A very good group of defensemen, and questions. You know, now they hope Brian Elliott solves their goaltending issues. But the Flames had goaltending issues last year, just like the Jets have had goaltending issues. They don't have anybody with the upside of a Connor Hellebuck in their system. But, you know, maybe Brian Elliott for a few years is able to provide some solid goaltending that they haven't been able to get from, you know, Jonas Hiller or Kari Ramo, or, you know, go through the litany of goaltenders they ran through, Joni Ordio. You know, there's a lot of similarities between how the Flames are being built right now and how the Jets are being built.
Oh, absolutely. And you look at the Jets and the Flames, they both made the playoffs 2 years ago. Unexpectedly, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're right, Drew. I mean, the question marks are a little bit in goal, because Connor Hellebuck had a great rookie season, but Connor Hellebuck isn't Martin Brodeur just yet.
Not yet. But, I mean, everyone expects that he's going to be a very solid NHL goaltender.
Absolutely. And Brian Elliott as well was excellent in the playoffs last year, and he's always been a good regular season goalie, dating back to his days with Ottawa. But you're right, Drew. And, you know, Sean Monahan is clearly a cornerstone piece for this team, just like Johnny Gaudreau is. And when you're talking about Monahan, what I like about Monahan is the fact that not only has he proven at a young age that he can play in the NHL, he's their number one center. Nice. And that's the position that teams covet. And there's a lot of teams around the NHL that are still looking for that number one center, right? So when you're talking about Monahan, he does it all. And he's responsible defensively. The guy's a sniper. He's not necessarily the most physical or mean guy, but he's a big guy, and he can... And he's not afraid to play that physical type of game. Not that that's – he's not Eric Lindros, but you know what I mean.
He's still filling out. I mean, he's 6'3", right, but he's not yet 200 pounds. So give him another couple years when he's the same age. He's going to look like Mark Scheifele does after he's able to put on some muscle and put on some mass onto his frame. I mean, there's a lot of similarities between Sean Monahan and Mark Scheifele. Monahan might be a little bit more defensively responsible, but I think that'll come for Scheifele, depending on, you know, what how the Jets deploy him. But there's a lot of similarities. Are you surprised he didn't go for the full 8 years? Or do you think that maybe Monahan said, you know, I only want 7 because I think I can cash in even more 7 years from now when I turn 28?
Yeah, that's a good point, Drew, because you think about Sean Monahan and you say, okay, well, Mark Scheifele signed for 8 years, right?
Yeah.
And why wouldn't he just, why wouldn't they want him under contract for one more year? And that could have been the case, that Sean Monahan and his agent wanted to have that extra year available so they could potentially get more money. I don't know the answer to that, but I was a little bit surprised, because you could definitely argue that you know exactly what Sean Monahan is. He's a franchise center.
Yeah.
He's proved it. You mentioned he's a 6th overall pick. He scored 63 points last year. He's a guy that has
a 30 goal scorer.
Right. Yeah. So why not sign him to 8 years?
I think it's a player decision in this case that he says, you know, I'll take 1 year less because I think I'm going to make it up on the back end.
Brad Treliving and Brian Burke would have given him the extra year.
Absolutely. They would never have had any hesitation. So I think this is a player decision that he decides he doesn't necessarily want that extra year.
I don't think Johnny Gaudreau, by the way, is that far behind as far as signing. I don't think you're looking at a player who you're not going to be waiting until late September, early October for him to sign. I could be wrong, but I just look at Gaudreau, and I think even though they're going to be right against the cap, and this is a situation that Calgary isn't familiar with over the last 4 or 5 years, right? They shed all of those salaries back in the day with Dion Phaneuf and Jay Bomeister and Jerome Iginla and all those guys 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're in a position where Sam Bennett's going to need to be paid in a couple years.
Sure, he's not at the level of Gaudreau or Monahan yet. But of course, if he, you know, former, what was he, a 3rd overall pick back in the day? fourth overall back in 2014. So assume he develops the same way, he's going to need to get paid at some point. But Goudreau, you mentioned, he was a point-a-game player last year, 78 points in 79 games. He's going to get a big payday once the ink is dry on that contract.
And he's such a dynamic player. I see a lot of similarities, and people have mentioned this before, between Johnny Gaudreau and Patrick Kane. I think Patrick Kane is more of an elite scorer, mm-hmm. but I don't think Johnny Gaudreau's that far behind. I think when you're talking about Johnny Gaudreau, you're looking at a guy who's going to be consistently a top 20 scorer at the NHL level.
Let's move to Jimmy Vesey. He finally makes his decision after months and months and months of hype and talking about it. The New York Rangers are the team he decides to go with. You surprised that Vesey went with the Rangers of all the teams that, you know, we'd heard there was seven or eight teams that were really in the running to get him, and he decides to sign on with the New York Rangers?
You know why I'm surprised, Drew? Not because I thought that Chicago, Toronto, and Boston were ahead of New York, because look at who New York has on the depth chart on left wing. Rick Nash and Chris Kreider.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Vesey's a left winger. So I was a little bit surprised because, you know, everyone's saying that, okay, Jimmy Vesey's going to play either with Mika Zibanejad or he's going to play with Derek Stepan on one of the top two lines, but Jimmy Vesey coming out of college, never played in the NHL. He's going to step right onto the top line and usurp Rick Nash. I don't see that happening. And then you look at Chris Kreider. Chris Kreider is an excellent hockey player. He's always been good in the playoffs.
Sure.
He's going to step into the second line role on the left wing. I see Jimmy Vesey starting the season on the third line. And this hype, by the way, is a little bit ridiculous. Like, are we talking about Jimmy Vesey? Is he a career 50-point player? Is he a career 40-point player? Well, if that's the case, why is there so much hype around him?
Well, because it's a quiet time of the year and there's nothing else to talk about, I suspect. And, you know, and the Leafs thought he was going to come to Toronto, so the Toronto media machine was working overdrive. But to your point, I mean, all we heard about, because every team that Vesey met with could only offer him the same exact contract. You know, they could offer him the two-year deal, the two-year entry-level contract with the same amount of bonuses. So this wasn't a dollars and cents sort of thing. Everything you heard from Vesey was, where is he going to get the best opportunity to make an impact?
Right, and he wants to play in the East.
So and he wanted to play in
New
the
York,
East.
Boston, Chicago,
Pittsburgh,
Toronto.
The Islanders, everything. You know, I don't see the Rangers, to your point just before about Rick Nash and Chris Kreider being ahead of him on the depth chart, I don't see how that there's an overwhelming opportunity to be, you know, much more than your third line left winger on the New York Rangers. And, you know, JT Miller is a pretty good player too, who's still sitting there.
Well, the thing is, Drew, you can't expect a guy to come out of college and just step in to a first line or second line role. I mean, the comparisons have been made to guys like Jack Eichel.
Yeah.
Or comparisons have been made to Johnny Gaudreau, guys that have come out of college. But the problem is, Jimmy Vesey was older when he was dominating NCAA hockey, right? So I'm not saying that he's not going to be a good player. I just think for someone to ask for a first or second line role right off the bat is a little bit unrealistic. And he's probably going to be a good player. He's going to score goals at the NHL level. But most teams aren't going to just gift him a top six role.
Well, you know, right. You know, it just doesn't get dropped into your lap with no guarantee that if you don't perform, you're not going to move anywhere. And so I thought no surprise, but the Jimmy Vesey hype was overwhelming. And
we went through this in 2012 with Justin Schultz, Drew.
Yeah.
And he has a Stanley Cup now,
but
the way he was being portrayed, Justin Schultz, that is that he's Brian Leetch or the second coming of Bobby Orr when he'd never stepped foot on an NHL ice surface. So I just think Jimmy Vesey's a good player, but we should just, you know, temper our expectations until he proves it to us that he's a great NHLer.
As we go to break, you know who else thinks we should temper our expectations regarding these college free agents? It's Brian Burke. This is what Brian Burke had to say about players of Jimmy Vesey's ilk.
If you look at the college free agents, they have made a dramatically insignificant contribution to our league. Tyler Bozak might be the best one. Most have very little impact. I think this player is going to play and make a difference. I think he's going to be a good player. But if you look at that group and the money that the league has spent on those players and their contribution, it is a pimple on an elephant's butt.
As we head to break, that was Brian Burke. When we come back on the other side, Brendan Leipsic of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Alex Burrow
Burroughs couldn't take that pass. Rich Clune with a shot, hit a body, knocked out of the air, they score! First National Hockey League goal for Brendan Leipzig, and Toronto has a 3-1 lead.
Mom and Dad cheering, and tears in her eyes. Amazing moment. And what a play.
25 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Brendan Leipzig. You know Brendan as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs and a member of the Toronto Marlies. Of course, he's a Winnipeg-based NHL player. Brendan, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Brendan. You know, we just obviously played your first career NHL, goal that happened back on February 13th of this past year. You know, take us to that goal. You know, what was it like scoring that goal for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Your parents were in the crowd. You know, just, you know, is that something that's, you know, burnt into your memory now, that you'll always remember that, you know, the play on the ice and everything else? Or was that just something that just, you know, in the course of the game was just, you know, something that came up with you?
Yeah, you know, it was a pretty surreal moment. You know, you wait all your life to kind of play your first NHL game, and then you don't really think of scoring your first NHL goal, but you know, I was lucky enough to get a lucky bounce, and, you know, I had to go back and watch it a couple times because I didn't really know if I could believe it actually happened, but it was just a great experience having my family in the crowd, like you said. And then I was also fortunate enough to have my billets from my junior hockey days down in Portland, Oregon, made the drive up too, so made the night even a little bit more special.
Where's the puck now, Brendan?
I haven't got it yet. I think the Leafs still have it, so I'm going to have to grab it from them one of these days here.
Yeah, I think your parents might want to put that on the mantle or something.
Yeah, I think so.
Brendan, now that you've played a couple of years in the American Hockey League and you've got some NHL experience, six games with the Leafs, how has your off-season approach changed your training in the summer? Are you still just focused on getting better and making it to the NHL level? How has it changed since maybe a couple of years ago when you were coming out of the dub?
It's changed a lot. Every year gets more amplified as you're getting older and closer to the NHL. Everything becomes a little bit more intense, a little bit more real. So, the training really hasn't changed all that much. More just your mindset of, you know, what it's going to take to get to the NHL, and, you know, putting in the work in the off season, getting on the ice, you know, maybe putting in an extra workout here or there, or an extra training session on the ice or something like that. But, it's more so just knowing what you have to do. And it's going to be that much harder as you're getting closer. And once you do get there, sticking in NHL is the hardest part. So just kind of trying to go through, you know, the summer and just trying to get better and whatever I can do to, give myself the best chance to stick in the NHL.
Brendan Leipzig is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brendan is a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization. Brendan, you were obviously a prolific scorer in the WHL with the Portland Winterhawks, 120 points back in 2012-2013. And you went and you were drafted by the Predators, of course, and, you know, spent the year or part of the year with the Milwaukee Admirals before being traded to the Toronto Marlies. You know, from the WHL to the AHL to the NHL levels, you know, what is the most significant differences, and, you know, between one level to the other, you know, what's been the biggest challenge from your perspective to keep moving up the ladder of professional hockey, as it were?
Well, the biggest thing for me is, obviously, goes without saying, is the speed of the game. The guys are a lot bigger, a lot faster, a lot stronger, as everybody knows, but for a guy like me who likes to have the puck on his stick and is a skilled player and likes to make plays and, you know, likes to get points and, you know, put the puck in the back of the net, as I've gone through the different levels and, you know, starting in the American League 2 years ago, was just kind of taking care of the puck. You know, back in junior, I'd, you know, get the puck on my stick and, you know, I'd be able to make a play every time I got it in the neutral zone or something like that. But as I got accustomed to kind of the American League game, was kind of just taking care of the puck and not turning it over and making smart plays like that. It's something I learned, and just kind of picking my spots when I can make plays and, you know, when it's time to put the puck deep or something like that. And basically just earning your coach's trust because, you know, you're not going to go out there and, you know, have a two-point game every game. You know, sometimes it's going to be a 1-0 game and you're going to want to be out in the last 5 minutes of a game or 5 minutes of a period. So earning the coach's trust is probably the biggest thing that I've learned so far.
Brendan, anybody who follows you on Twitter knows you're good buddies with Winnipeg Jets draft pick Nick Petan, who was your former line mate with the Portland Winterhawks. How often do you guys share your experiences in the AHL and NHL and try to push each other with those experiences?
Yeah, you know, myself and Nick, we're best buddies. We probably talk a couple times a week. We don't really push each other as much as, you know, some people might think. It's more of just a friendship and, you know, he wants the best for me. I want the best for him. He's a great player. You know, I think he's got a real bright future here in Winnipeg. You know, and it's good to see what he's been able to accomplish in such a short time here in his pro career. And, you know, same with Chase DeLeo, another one of my good friends that is kind of nipping on his heels too, pushing for a spot on the Jets. So anytime you can see some former teammates and, you know, even guys in your hometown that are, you know, kind of making a mark for themselves, it's great to see.
Brendan Leipzig is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brendan, you're, you know, an undersized player, you know, when you really think of professional athletes and particularly NHL players, you know, right around the 5'10 mark or so. You know, is there a player that you emulate that's currently, you know, an NHL regular that's maybe of similar size to you? You know, a guy that comes to mind, of course, you know, Brendan Gallagher of the Montreal Canadiens, also sort of on the undersized part. Or do you not really look at, you know, look at your size and compare it to somebody else of a similar size and you just say, you know, there's a, could be a guy who's 6'4", and that's the kind of game you want to emulate.
Yeah, you know, when you're going through the ranks trying to make pro hockey, you're always going to be compared to, you know, different guys, or people are going to say this is a guy you should try and, you know, model your game after or anything. But you kind of just want to be your own player. You want to be the first kind of, you know, Brendan Leipzig to make it to the NHL, which is the big thing. But like you said, Brendan Gallagher is a great comparison. You know, an undersized guy with not the most skill in the world, but goes to the gritty areas of the ice, plays hard, plays like he's 6'4", but, you know, he's only 5'10". Guys like that, you know, Andrew Shaw and Brad Marchand, those guys definitely have paved the way for some smaller guys. And, you know, I don't really see my size being too big of a deal. You know, like you said, I've made it through junior and through the American League and played some NHL games, so I don't really see my size as that much of an issue in the game anymore.
Brendan, with players like 2016 first overall pick Austin Matthews and 2015 fourth overall pick Mitch Marner in the Toronto Maple Leaf system right now, how exciting is it to be a young player in the Leafs organization right now?
It's very exciting. You know, it's no secret that the Leafs are in a bit of a rebuild here, a bit of a retool here the last year or so. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for these young players, including myself, which is exciting. Which is also it's going to be interesting too, because there's a lot of young guys battling for spots. So this will probably be one of the more intense training camps that I'll be a part of. You know, a lot of guys on the Marlies this past year that I played with, some of my best buddies, we're all going to be, you know, battling for spots with each other this year. So there'll be no friends out there, that's for sure. Once training camp comes around.
I was going to ask you about that dynamic there, Brendan. Brendan Leipzig joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You mentioned that, you know, you're buddies with the guys on the Marlies. You know, you'll go through the, you know, the battles of the AHL with one another. But at the same time, you are still competing with, you know, to try and make it to the NHL level. So, you know, how do you strike that balance there? You just look at sort of your teammates as also your internal competition. And when they do well, you're happy for them. But you also know inside that you have to do better to impress, just like they're doing as well.
Yeah, that, and at the end of the day, that's kind of pro hockey, and that's kind of what the American League is a little bit. You know, as much as it is, you know, you're trying to win, it's also about player development and individual development. You know, you obviously want to see, you know, your buddies do well, but you're also worried about yourself too at the same time. But you know, our team had a lot of success this year in the American League, and you know, that only will help individual success, which it did for the majority of our team. So that's the most important thing. But it's no secret at the end of the day, we're going to be battling for NHL jobs come this fall. So it'll be exciting. I think everybody's looking forward to it. You know, guys are looking forward to the challenge and some of the opportunities that might come from it.
you know, Mike Babcock obviously was probably the biggest free agent of last offseason, and he ends up as the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Even though it was only six games, how much did you learn from, you know, playing for Mike Babcock and having him as your head coach? And do you own a pair of Bab socks as well, you know, as a result?
I do not, but I learned a lot. You know, he's a very black and blue type coach. He tells you how it is. There's no secrets. If you're not playing your best, or he expects more of you, he's gonna let you know. I had a couple, you know, little conversations with him, just, you know, kind of about my game and how I've been playing a little bit. But you know, it was a good experience. He's a great coach and a good teacher also. So you know, hopefully you can learn a lot more from him in maybe the years to come here.
Brenda, you mentioned earlier that you're a skilled offensive player, and those numbers are shown, whether that was in the WHL or last year with the Toronto Marlies. You put up 54 points in 65 games. But when it comes to becoming a full-time NHLer, how does that work? You obviously want to be an offensive player, but if you're asked to play a different role, whether that's a third line or fourth line role, and that means mucking it up a little bit, is that something that you're willing to do to become a full-time NHLer?
Yeah, you know, whatever it takes to get to the NHL, I think you could ask anybody they're willing to do. You know, when I broke into the Western League as a 16-year-old, I was, you know, playing on the third and fourth line, just kind of throwing my weight around there and just kind of nipping at any opportunity I could get. And that's kind of how I think my NHL career will start once I get it going. You know, I'm not going to start on the first or second line. I'll probably start in, you know, a fourth line role, trying to kill penalties and then slowly try and work my way up. But, you know, I'll worry about that when the time comes, but whatever opportunity I'm given, I'm just going to take it and try and roll with it. You know, like you said, you know, a guy like Andrew Shaw didn't start playing on the top two lines, but he kind of is one of those guys that can move up and down the lineup, stuff like that. So I feel like I can do that, and that's how, you know, at the start, that's how I might be able to, you know, break into the league.
Brendan, last question for you. Last couple of weeks before you really, you know, get back, you know, on the ice and training camp ramps up, and, you know, of course the World Cup of Hockey will be taking place in Toronto. You know, how you've been enjoying the summer? You've been able to, you know, kick back, maybe spend some time at the lake, get a couple golf games, and you enjoying the Olympics at all? Any Olympic events that, you know, if life had played out a little differently, you could see yourself as a summer Olympic athlete?
Yeah. It's been a great summer for me so far. I've been back in Winnipeg a little bit, taking a couple trips to see a couple buddies, spent some time at the lake. But yeah, the Olympics have been great. Pretty impressed with you know, that Andre DeGrasse is pretty special to see what he's been doing, kind of breaking onto the scene. But yeah, a couple golf games here and there. But all in all, it's been a pretty enjoyable summer.
You know, Andre DeGrasse, around 5'10", is close in height to you. So maybe this will be your, he had his breakout performance at the Rio Games. Maybe this will be your breakout performance this coming year with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Brendan Leipzig, member of the Toronto Maple Leafs, member of the Toronto Marlies. Thanks very much for joining us, Brendan. Best of luck in this upcoming season.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Brendan. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the remaining restricted free agents throughout the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Brendan Leipzig of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization for joining us. In case you missed that interview, in case you missed any of the show, we'll have it available for you to download. You can check us out on iTunes, look for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and of course our website, illegalcurve.com, has all of the good information available there. Still to come on the program, Gord Wilson, Ottawa Senators color analyst, joins us in about 10 minutes time. And then in the last hour, our good friend Josh Cooper from Yahoo's Puck Daddy is going to join us. I think we'll talk probably talk a little bit about hockey and probably some delis. We generally get into the deli conversations with Josh, so Bernstein's Deli, I'm sure, will come up in our conversation with Joshua Cooper.
Yeah, as it does every week. You know, just quickly here,
uh-huh.
Thanks again to Brendan Leipzig for coming on the show. It's going to be interesting to see if he's going to be able to crack into the Toronto Maple Leafs full-time lineup. You know, really good player, really nice kid. And, you know, his dad is a very nice guy, Greg, and always been a big supporter of the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely going to be pulling for Brendan to make the Leafs full-time this year.
You mentioned Brendan, of course. What year was he the Jewish Athlete of the Year in Winnipeg or in Manitoba?
Brendan, what year? That would have been... That was when he was with the Portland Winterhawks. Yeah, I think it was 2012. Yeah,
something like that. So, you know, obviously, you know, again, the Jewish Athlete of the Year is probably, he's probably more interested in winning, you know, a spot on the Maple Leafs lineup than the Jewish Athlete of the Year trophy. But nice to see both in that instance.
Yeah, shout out to my cousin Aaron Shibu, who was actually also a nominee for the Jewish Athlete of the Year. He didn't win. That was back in probably 2000.
Yeah.
But he was also nominated. He was a very good hockey player with the Charleswood Hawks
so
of the MMJHL.
What you're saying is your relatives got the athletic talent. You didn't so much get it.
And
you know, nephew Hunter, of course, you know, his birthday is lighting it up in Timbits hockey, I understand. And you were, you know, to your credit though, Ezzy, you were the worst ever first overall pick in the Jewish Men's Hockey League.
And it was B League.
Yes, the B League of the Jewish Men's Hockey League.
But I was the first overall pick,
yeah,
and we did win the championship that year.
Oh, you did you?
Yeah, okay. Got to go to the Rady Dinner.
Oh, nicely.
Yeah, because the winners of the Maccabi League get to go to the Rady Dinner.
You
that's, you know,
big finals. I don't know what you're doing Monday night, but Monday night is the game one of the finals of the Jewish Men's Slow Pitch League. The House of Ashkenazi, of course, back to our usual spot in the finals, as we're going to be playing against the Swingers starting Monday night.
Dave Minuk's on the team.
Dave Minuk.
Matty Leibel,
yes.
You guys are defending champions,
we're
right?
We're not defending champions. We actually have lost in the semifinals the past two seasons. We were the back-to-back champions before that. So we're looking for our third title in 5 years starting Monday. I don't want to use the word dynasty, but, you know, if you get 3-5, as we've seen with the Chicago Blackhawks, you can start using the word dynasty pretty well there.
Yeah, I'll definitely come check you guys out.
There's 0% of chance you're going
to
be there.
That's not true. And I used to play on the team.
You did used to play on the team, yep, until you were asked to leave the team.
Well, I wasn't asked to leave the team. Let's just say that my batting average was so low that it was more so
the only
me
thing lower,
taking myself
the only thing lower
the
was your blood alcohol content?
Yeah.
Anyways, well, let's look at some of the other restricted free agents that are still to sign in the NHL. It certainly isn't a problem that only the Winnipeg Jets have. I think the big one, the biggest of all the names to me, is Nikita Kucherov of the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is a guy who last year, you can certainly make the argument that was the best player on the team, given that Stamkos, of course, had his injury concerns at the end of the year there. Kucherov had 30 goals last year for the first time in his career. He had 66 points, 19 points in the 17 playoff games. He's got 148 points so far in his NHL career. Nikita Kucherov is a guy who's going to certainly get paid and will probably get paid in and around that. He should get an 8-year deal if he wants one, and he's going to break the bank. He could be up in the Vladimir Tarasenko range of about $7.5 million a season.
Well, you know, Vladimir Tarasenko is a good comparable, Drew. He's also a fellow Russian. Philip Forsberg is another good comparable for
Kucherov. Kucherov's better than Forsberg right
now. I do agree, and Forsberg was awful in the playoffs. We'll ask Josh Cooper about that. He used to cover the Nashville Predators, but in that second round against the San Jose Sharks, Philip Forsberg was not what he needed to be. But back to Nikita Kucherov, you know, we talked about Johnny Gaudreau and Jacob Trouba first segment, Drew, and those are guys that are obviously at the top of the list of unsigned RFAs. But Nikita Kucherov, a couple of years ago when the Tampa Bay Lightning went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Chicago Blackhawks, he was one of their top players, along with Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat, of course, the triplet line. But last year in the playoffs, this past year, Nikita Kucherov, to me, was hands down their best player. And he was over a point a game. I think he had 19 or 20 points in the first three rounds of the playoffs for the Lightning. He had those game-winning goals. But Nikita Kucherov, to me, when you're talking about who you want to build your franchise around, and I realize that he might not be in that same class as Tyler Seguin and Sidney Crosby and Jamie Benn and Ovechkin, but Nikita Kucherov, to me, is a bona fide top 10 forward in the NHL.
I think you can make the argument. I mean, Tyler Johnson had a lousy year last year with the Lightning. So, I mean, I think Kucherov has certainly exceeded Tyler Johnson. I mean,
what does that tell you, Drew? If Tyler Johnson took a step back, but Nikita Kucherov
forward,
Kucherov actually had a better year.
It tells me that that
he's the better player.
Kucherov is the better player, and he's the
and Johnson's older, by the way.
Yeah, and Johnson is, you know, certainly he's 26 years old at this point in time. And Tyler Johnson's a great story and everything. Guy who, you know, undrafted, came out of nowhere to really have some good years with the Lightning. And not to say he's not going to have future good years, but from, you know, Kucherov, I mean, you can certainly make the argument that maybe he's not quite Steven Stamkos, but he's not far off from Steven Stamkos.
The way Nikita
maybe not in the goal scoring, maybe not in a 60 goal scoring level, but points wise, Nikita Kucherov can certainly, he can do what very few players in the NHL can do.
Kucherov reminds me a lot of Patrick Elias, and Kucherov reminds me somewhat of Pavel Datsyuk. And these are the types of players that seem to always make a play when they're on the ice.
Sure.
And Kucherov also scores big goals. Mm-hmm. And Datsyuk and Elias were guys that scored big goals when those teams were winning Stanley Cups. And this Tampa Bay Lightning team, Drew, as we know, they've kept all of their pieces together. They signed Steven Stamkos long-term. They signed Victor Hedman long-term. They signed Alex Killorn long-term. Mm-hmm. They bought out Matt Carl to free up a little cap room. And now they're going to be right up against the cap, and Steve Yzerman might have to move someone. I mean, Nikita Kucherov, Drew, you're talking about a guy who should make seven a year.
He's going to. I mean, he's not going to agree to anything for less than that, simply because the numbers.
You could argue he should make eight.
Yeah, the numbers that he's put up dictate that this is what a guy of his ilk gets paid. You know, right now, Monahan, with the contract he signed yesterday, is the, you know, the top of the board for the RFAs that were this year, you know, in terms of salary.
Yep.
Monahan, you know, McKinnon, Scheifele, Forsberg, you know, Barkov, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Kucherov should exceed all of them, I would think. And, you know, if he wants an eight-year deal, he could get 8 years and $56 million from the Tampa Bay Lightning.
No, I, you know, on this topic, I think Kucherov is better than Tarasenko overall. I think Tarasenko might be a flashier, somewhat more naturally gifted offensive player, but Kucherov is a guy as well. Kucherov isn't afraid to play the physical game.
No.
I mean, he's a smaller player. He's not a guy that's going to go around and dominate physically like a Dustin Byfuglien, but he's a guy that isn't afraid to go in the corners. Like, he plays more of a North American style game for a Russian, but he's got that top end Russian skill. And Alexander Ovechkin last year said that he thinks Kucherov is going to score 50 goals. So when a guy like Ovechkin, in my opinion, the best goal scorer in the NHL, and most people's best goal scorer, if he's saying that, you know that this guy's really good. And Kucherov is going to be a big part of the World Cup of Hockey team for Russia.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a big part of international hockey for Russia. This guy is really good, and he's going to make a lot of money. He'll get a 6 or 7 year contract, I think.
I think, you know, now it's obviously too soon, but, you know, that it's August 20th, and I haven't really looked very closely haven't looked close enough to do our season preview stuff. But, you know, with Nikita Kucherov and the way the Tampa Bay Lightning are built, there's no reason why they certainly, I think they will be a lot of people's Stanley Cup favorite this coming season.
Well, but they're going to run into problems, because when you're talking about Stamkos, Hedman, and Kucherov all getting the big money, how are they going to also fit in Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat in there?
But that's going to be an issue for next season.
Right. I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys
traded. Yes, and I think almost both of those guys, they're getting paid the exact same amount of money this year, and they're both going to be RFAs next year. It's almost like they're both going to be competing to some extent against one another this season to see which one is going to get paid and which one's going to stick around versus which one might have to be dealt off in order to get the other guy under
the
salary
cap. And
we
just saw that with Vlad and Byfuglien.
We've seen it with Chicago, with, you know, their salary cap machinations and everything else. So the Lightning only have about $6.5 million of cap space right now. Assuming that, you know, Kucherov takes up all that amount, they're going to have to get rid of somebody else in the interim. But the Lightning are in an enviable position in that they are loaded with talent and stacked from top to bottom. I mean, they have a number of the best offensive goal scorers in Stamkos and Kucherov. Victor Hedman is turning into be one of the best defensemen in the NHL.
Yep, he already is, I think.
Already is. I mean, certainly, you know, a perennial Norris Trophy guy is going to be after he was, you know, a former first overall pick. Is he first overall pick?
Who's that?
Hedman?
Second
overall pick.
Yep.
Okay, I knew first didn't sound exactly right. Back in 2009. And you got a goaltending.
That was the Taylor Hall draft.
That's right. Well, in hindsight, you would take Hedman over Hall right now. I would, at least. And then you have two goaltenders.
No, that was the John Tavares draft.
That, right, the Tavares, yeah.
Taylor Hall was 2010.
That was Taylor Tyler with Hall and Sagan.
Yep.
Yeah. In any event, the Lightning are stacked from top to bottom and likely to be a Stanley Cup favorite next season. We'll get back into the RFAs on the other side of this interview. When we come back, Gord Wilson from TSN 1200 is going to join us, talk a little bit about the Ottawa Senators offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to be joined by Gord Wilson. Gord is the Ottawa Senators color analyst on our sister station, TSN 1200. Gord, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. And yes, good morning to you.
How's the summer been? You've been enjoying the off season, but you're ready to get into it with the with another Sen season close on the horizon?
Absolutely. When you guys touched base yesterday to talk hockey, I thought, oh, it's just around the corner here. It's absolutely perfect. Of course, the Senators missed the playoffs this past season, and so the summer has been a little bit longer than had hoped, but it's been quite enjoyable. We haven't had a lot of rain here, and it's been extremely hot and humid in the nation's capital most of this summer.
And let me ask you, Gord, before we get into the actual Senators, you know, from my perspective, I don't have that sort of excitement bug yet, or I don't know if I'm even going to get it for the World Cup of Hockey.
Yeah.
How about yourself? Are you pumped for the World Cup of Hockey, or is this sort of a made-for-TV sort of event that's not yet grabbing your attention fully?
Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. Not quite grabbing the attention. And it's funny because I play Thursday night hockey throughout the summer months, and I with a bunch of buddies the other day, and we were talking about the World Cup, and somebody spoke up and said, was that going on this year? I mean, that's the kind of attitude I think right now that that people have towards this. We have an exhibition game. I think it's Canada-US, and pardon my ignorance here because I'm not 100% certain, but there's not a lot of attention right now. And I know it's building in Toronto. There's no question that the emails that are starting to come out now from the Players Association and from the National Hockey League, they'll start to generate a little bit more hype and publicity and interest for sure. But as it stands right now, yeah, it really hasn't registered on the radar for most, I don't think.
Yeah. Pierre Dorion, the Senators general manager, he's had a busy offseason. He took care of a number of different trades and contracts. Still one big one to go, and that's, of course, with defenseman Cody Ceci. Mm-hmm. Sort of had a breakout season last year, you know, but he's obviously due for a new contract. You know, how do you think that those negotiations are going to play out? Is it a matter of, as we've talked about here in Winnipeg with Jacob Trouba, both sides are sort of looking, are going to, you know, deadline hunt, as we like to talk about on the show. They'll pick a deadline, whether it be the start of the World Cup of Hockey or the start of training camp, and that's when they're really going to get into the nitty-gritty of the negotiations to get something done with the young Senators defenseman.
Yeah, you know, Pierre has adamantly stated that Cody Ceci will be in the fold and will be on the ice for the Senators when the season starts in October, so he's very confident that something's going to get done. I think what the issue now, if you want to call it that, the situation is it going to be a 2 or 3 year bridge contract, or is it going to be the whole enchilada? And I think Cody's camp has indicated that he would like long term, in other words, 5 or 6 years. And I think the Senators are more interested in something a little bit of the shorter term variety, possibly a 2 or 3 year contract. So something will get done. Cody wants, he's an Ottawa boy. He wants to be here. As you say, a breakthrough season last year. One of the interesting things that we've been watching with Cody Ceci, a former first-round pick, his acceleration to being very good. It didn't take him long. He was half a season, not even half a season. He was 3 months in Binghamton, the Senators' minor league club, before getting called up in December because of injury. He gets called up, and he's not looked back. He just stayed in the lineup because he played so well. And what we're anxious to see, certainly what I'm anxious to see this year, he teamed up with Dion Phaneuf last year when Dion got acquired from Toronto in February. And while Dion got hurt at the end of the season and missed the last 15, 20 games, he played very well with Ceci. And Cody was very quick to say how much he's learned in the short period of time that they've played together from Dion. And so those two, I think, are going to be a second pairing combination for Ottawa. And I think everybody's anxious to see not only Dion Phaneuf for a full season with the Ottawa Senators, but Dion Phaneuf with a full season with Cody Ceci.
Gord, we have to ask you about the announcement earlier in the week of Daniel Alfredsson and his number being retired, his number 11, of course. I know that you were there and you were the master of ceremonies. First off, has everyone in Ottawa finally forgotten about Daniel Alfredsson's decision to leave the Ottawa Senators for a year and play with the Detroit Red Wings? And how fitting is it that his number 11 is going to be retired on December 29th against the Detroit Red Wings?
Well, you know what? I'll start from the back end first, and it's extremely fitting. It was a no-brainer for the player honoring committee to come up with this name. It's the 25th anniversary of the franchise. They want to do special things throughout the year, the hockey club does, and certainly nothing more special than putting a player's jersey up to the rafters. It's the highest accolade perhaps a player can receive from a club team or from his longtime team. That being said, it's all forgotten, the fact that he went away for a year and played for Detroit. He's been back here now. He had a wonderful, in 2014, he had a wonderful retirement game, basically, by coming out for the pregame warm-up, wearing number 11, all the players on the ice wearing number 11. It was just a very special emotional moment and obviously very fitting for the player who played 17 seasons for the Ottawa Senators. He has more points. Only one other player has more games as an Ottawa Senator, and that's Chris Phillips, and he beat him by one. There's no question that this was just an obvious choice. The fact that it's against Detroit on December 29th, I'm not sure if the opponent played a role in when the Senators were going to do it. One would think that perhaps it did, based on where Alfredsson ended up his career, and based on a lot of teams coming to town, and Detroit being one of them, and all of a sudden it's that game. So it's going to be a very special night for sure.
Gord, I'm going to ask you a question here, and you might be a little bit biased, but based on what he's accomplished in the NHL and internationally, is Daniel Alfredsson a Hall of Famer?
You know, and I talked about this the other day, the Hall of Fame criteria is an interesting one in that a lot of people associate the Hockey Hall of Fame with a career in the National Hockey League, and the Hockey Hall of Fame is an international hall. It's reserved for the best players who have played in the world, and when you represent your country, I think Alfie did it 14 times. He's won an Olympic gold. He's won an Olympic silver. He's won world championships. He has over 400 goals in the National Hockey League. He captained a team that and helped put the Senators really on the map as far as the NHL is concerned. And you're right. I'll preface this by saying I'm biased because I saw and called every one of his games as a Senator. To me, yeah, just a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. And
I agree with you, by the way.
Yeah, and you know, to get to know this young man the way I have over the last, since 1995, so we're talking 21 years of business dealings in terms of professional business dealings with interviews and in the locker room, on the ice, stuff that I've had to do with as part of my job. It's also getting to know him in the community and as a friend. This guy has just been, he'll just blow you away with his desire to make those around him perhaps a little bit better, but the humblest, the most humble guy you'll ever meet. So I have no problem saying, yeah, I think he is a Hall of Famer.
Gord Wilson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gord is the Ottawa Senators color analyst on our sister station, TSN 1200 in the nation's capital. Gord, you know, you mentioned one first-round pick in Cody Ceci. The Senators expect to get a deal done with him in the coming weeks. They did make a trade in that they shipped out another former first-round pick. That's Mika Zibanejad, who obviously earlier in the summer was traded to the New York Rangers in exchange for Derek Brassard. You don't often see 23-year-old centermen get traded, particularly for older centermen. You know, your thoughts, we haven't had an opportunity to speak with you about that deal. You know, your thoughts on the logic behind the decision from Senators General Manager Pierre Dorion, sort of putting his head a little bit out on the line there in that you might not fully know what Zibanejad is as an NHLer when you have a pretty good idea what Derek Brassard is, a quality player, but certainly not what I would describe as a superstar.
Not a superstar, and nor is Mika Zibanejad. Does Zibanejad have the potential to be a possible superstar? Yeah, I guess so. At 23 years of age, there's still a lot of growth. It was a move that caught me a bit off guard. I liked the way Mika was developing, and I liked the way the opportunity he had to be better. I had a long conversation with him the night before the last game of the season, and we were in Boston, and we talked about his 20 goals and the fact that he was able to match the number of points that he had the year before. And he talked about how disappointing the season was for him, and that he expected more from himself. He probably should have had 30 or 35 goals, but I think he has the potential to do that. There is an issue, or a question, not an issue, but there is an overhanging question about his level of commitment to the game. He's got a lot of interests outside of hockey, and he wants to be, I think he wants to establish himself in the music industry as a producer of some kind, and he's got a real love and passion for that. And I think there were questions, whether right or wrong, there were questions about his full commitment to be an NHL player that has the potential to be a very good, if not star player in the NHL. When you're taken sixth overall, one before Mark Scheifele, I think, if I'm not mistaken, you have that potential. You should have that potential. For the Senators to obviously trade him away, one of the other factors that Pierre Dorion was looking at was the fact that this team has missed the playoffs two of the last 3 years, and they want to win now. And Derek Brassard gives them the better chance of winning now.
Gord, a couple of days ago, the Ottawa Senators announced that they'd signed Logan Brown, who was taken 11th overall in this past 2016 NHL draft. I got a chance to watch him play at the World Under-18s in Grand Forks. The guy's definitely got the size at 6'6". Do you think that Logan Brown is going to be given an opportunity to make the Ottawa Senators this year? I guess, do you see him making the Ottawa Senators this year, or do you think he spends most of the season with the Windsor Spitfires?
Yeah, he'll be back to junior. I don't think there's any question about that. This organization has had a history of allowing their players or putting their players in situations where they best excel. And obviously, unless Logan absolutely blows everybody away at training camp, I don't think there's any question he is penciled in for the Ontario Hockey League this year. That being said, again, here's a young man who's got tremendous potential. At 6'6", he's going to provide massive size down the middle. The Senators have a young player by the name of Nick Paul as well, who I think played 21 games for Ottawa last year, and he showed signs. He's 6'5", 6'4", or 6'5". So they've got some size down the middle, down the road. I think what the organization is certainly going to do, though, in particular with Logan Brown, is give him every opportunity to be the best he can and dominate at times where possible. And the best place to do that would be in the Ontario Hockey League.
Gord, we'll let you go on this last question. Mike Hoffman was one of the best values for money in the NHL last year. $2 million, yeah. And he gets you just under 30 goals with 29 goals. This is coming off a year, 2 years ago, where he had 27 goals. He comes to agreement with the Senators, a four-year, $20.75 million contract. He sort of had what I would describe as a love-hate or maybe a tenuous relationship with former head coach Dave Cameron. Cameron often would put Hoffman at the end of the bench, you know, particularly due to some defensive lapses. you know, is there a new relationship on the horizon now between Mike Hoffman and new Senators head coach Guy Boucher? You know, do you think that they are this is a new relationship and a sort of a restart, and the time that Hoffman and maybe a little bit of the controversy given the arbitrator's ruling is now behind them, and you know, maybe the sky is the limit now for Mike Hoffman as a member of the Ottawa Senators?
Well, there's certainly, and you know what, fellas, I'm just going to change phones very quickly here. Sorry about that. My cordless is losing battery power. Apologies for that.
That's okay.
That being said, you know what? It's a new beginning with an old coach. Guy Boucher, as the new head coach of the Ottawa Senators, actually had Mike Hoffman as a junior player in Drummondville of the Quebec League. So there's a relationship there, and I know Guy is going to do everything he can to get even more out of Mike Hoffman. Look, when you lead your team in goal scoring two straight years, it's not proper, it's not good business sense to allow a player to go to arbitration a second year in a row. And the Senators knew that. They knew if he had gone to arbitration, he'd be walking next year. And Mike has a tremendous amount of potential to score even more goals. I don't think there's any question about that. Throughout his career, whether it be in junior, the minor pro level, or with the NHL Senators, he has always been what's been described as a slow starter. And in terms of his development, he bounced around the Ontario Hockey League, ended up in the Quebec League, won a championship in the Quebec League, won scoring titles, did this, did that, and they see the potential there. And certainly when you score 29 goals in the NHL, you're deserving of a pretty good paycheck nowadays.
Gord Wilson is the Ottawa Senators color analyst on our sister station, TSN 1200. Gord, really appreciate your time. Thanks very much for doing this. We'll hook up again once the season starts and get an update on things in the nation's capital.
Oh, sounds good. Thanks for having me today, fellas. Have a great day.
You too, Gord. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Gord.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll continue our look at some of the unsigned RFAs throughout the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1200.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Gord Wilson for joining us on the program to talk about the Ottawa Senators offseason. As I mentioned, if you missed that interview, if you missed the interview with Brendan Leipzig earlier in the program, it's all available for download on iTunes. Just search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, get it sent to your iPod each and every week, or to your iTunes, however you like it. Of course, show available for download on illegalcurve.com as well. Want to give a shout out to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. If you're looking to play a round of golf on this weekend, we highly recommend either of those two fine courses. Our good friends at Bell Acres and Clear Lake will take very good care of you as you hit the links on this Saturday, the 20th day of August. Get your golf rounds in now. Probably maybe another realistic 6 weeks of golf season left, unfortunately. Maybe if we're lucky, we get a full eight into October. But the season is winding down, as it were. The golf season is winding down. So get your rounds in now while you can.
Well, Drew, let's not start talking like that. I'm hoping to at least get two or three more rounds in at Bell Acres, maybe even more than that.
I said you got 6 to 8 weeks, so you know you should be out there every weekend.
By the way, is Brooke Henderson going to win a medal?
Brooke Henderson is unlikely to win a medal at this point. She just missed a short birdie putt on the 17th hole of the fourth round. She has to eagle 18 to have a chance at a medal, and then there would be a tiebreaker, and I'm not sure about the tie-breaking procedures for the Women's Olympic Golf Tournament. But I was saying to producer Rory before the show started that this golf course in Rio it's got an interesting look to it. It's sort of a Lynx style course by the, you know, sort of combination of Lynx style and a sort of a Arizona desert course. There's no real water on it, but there's sort of those, you know, the desert areas, and then there's a lot of mounds to it. So I've sort of enjoyed watching the golf tournament in a sort of a different looking course than you typically see on the PGA or LPGA tours.
Drew, are you Lorne Rubenstein?
I wish I could be Lauren Rubenstein. Lauren, of course, is a Canadian Sports Hall of Famer, I think, or a Canadian Golf Hall of Famer, fantastic golf journalist. That'd be a good life to be a golf journalist, I got to say. You know, I can do. I can be Bob Weeks. I can be Lauren Rubenstein. I can be some of the Golf Talk Canada guys. If they ever need somebody to sub in, I would be glad to do that.
Mark Sacchino is one of the best guests that Rick Ralph has on the Roundtable.
Yeah.
He's excellent.
He's very funny.
I agree. I mean, covering golf for a living?
It's not a bad deal. It's not a bad deal whatsoever, covering golf for a living. I think I can handle that, especially I think it was a number of years ago now when Tim Campbell used to go cover the Masters, and after every major, they on the Monday after, I think there's an opportunity, there's a random draw, and there's an opportunity for some of the journalists who are still there to actually go and play the course. And if you know, Tim can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I sort of remember this, that I think he's actually had the opportunity to play Augusta National.
Wow.
And which, of course, would be a fantastic experience. I don't quite have the pull to get onto Augusta National. Maybe if there's a mini golf course somewhere, you know, in Georgia, that's about as close as I'm going to be able to get to playing Augusta National. But that would be a hell of a golf course to play.
I'd love to play one of these courses just to see how bad I would actually be. Like, I'm not a good golfer,
no.
But I imagine if I played Augusta or if I played Carnoustie or St. Andrews in Scotland, yeah. I bet I would shoot like 200.
What you don't appreciate watching on television so much, it was a couple years back, 2 years ago now, 3 years ago, I was at the PGA Championship.
That's when it rained, right?
The PGA Championship.
Wasn't there like a crazy storm?
There
or something?
Yes, it was all delayed, and we were at the PGA. It was at Valhalla in Louisville. And what you don't appreciate,
isn't that Louisville?
No, well, it depends. It's not really Louisville if you're from the Kentucky area or become an adopted
so it's
member.
Louisville.
Louisville. It's sort of like one word, Louisville. So you don't
it's like
pronounce
L-V-I-L-L-E, Louisville.
Almost, yeah. L-apostrophe. Exactly. You don't pronounce it like Louisville. It's like Louisville. Anyways, what you don't appreciate on TV is the undulation and the height changes that you see when you're actually walking the course, and how significant, you know, you watch the Masters, you know, and you watch Augusta National. I'm not sure how this became the Illegal Curve Golf Show.
Let's
but
get
whatever.
Back to hockey, Drew.
We will, but you don't appreciate just the height difference from tee box to green and back and forth that you do when you actually walk the course and see everything along those lines. Anyways, back to hockey.
I feel like watching Happy Gilmore right now.
Well, there you go. You can do that too. You know, let's mention some of the other unrestricted free agents. We've covered a lot of them. Some of the lesser guys, quote-unquote lesser guys, Rasmus Ristolainen of the Buffalo Sabres, you mentioned him. He's a defenseman. You know,
He had 40 points this past season.
Yeah, he's a former first-round pick of the Sabres.
Good defenseman.
He's a good defenseman. He's going to be a breakout defenseman on a Buffalo Sabres team that needs him. You know, him and Zach Bogosian are sort of their back-end future there in Buffalo.
Well, but when you're talking about Rasmus Ristolainen, Drew, he averaged, I don't have it in front of me, he was around 25, 26 minutes a game. He was top 20 in the NHL when you're talking about ice time and points. So it's funny, you know, we talked about Johnny Gaudreau, Jacob Trouba, Nikita Kucherov, some of the top unsigned RFAs, but Rasmus Ristolainen is right up there. And this guy can skate. He's got offensive ability. He's got good size. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Zach Bogosian. He's still relatively young at 25, 26 years old. But Rasmus Ristolainen here, I mean, he, I think, is due for a 6 or 7 year contract. And when you're talking about comparables, I've heard Morgan Riley thrown out there.
Sure.
And I think when you're talking about Hampus Lindholm, another guy that we should mention, Lindholm and Ristolainen, these guys have very bright futures.
They're the future of, Lindholm is, you know, a Swede and Ristolainen is a Finn, I believe.
Yep.
And so those guys are going to be
both World Cup guys, by the way.
Of course, they're going to be perennial international players for Team Sweden and Team Finland.
And what's most fascinating to me about these two guys,
because
I think these guys are both going to sign long-term contracts, I don't think the club or the player, maybe more so the player and the player's agent, would want to sign a bridge contract. But I think when you're the Ducks or you're the Sabres, I don't think you want to be in a PK Subban situation like they were in back in whatever it was, 2011, 2012, when they signed Subban to a 2-year bridge deal and then he really cashed in on his next deal.
Sure.
So Ristolainen and Lindholm, I mean, if we can really, you know, cover those guys both at the same time.
Yeah. They're both going to get paid.
What's most impressive, though, is that these guys have come in at 21, 22 years old and been everyday NHL defensemen that are playing top power play, that are playing top PK, that are playing 23, 24 plus minutes a game. That's what's most impressive, because usually those roles, Drew, are reserved for defensemen that are 27, 28, early 30s.
Especially when you consider that it takes longer to develop as a defenseman in the NHL.
Right. So these guys are both really good defensemen. I'm actually a little bit surprised, because the Anaheim Ducks signed Hampus Lindholm a long time. I feel like it was like April when the Ducks signed Sammy Vatanen. And as far as I'm concerned, Hampus Lindholm's a better defenseman. And Sammy Vatanen might have the better offensive numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I've watched of Hampus Lindholm, and we've watched him quite a bit because the Ducks are in the Western Conference and they played the Jets in the playoffs a couple of years ago. This guy, he has elements to his game of Drew Doughty. I don't think he has the offensive upside of a Drew Doughty, but this guy is an excellent skater and a very smart player. Always seems to be in the right position. Really is your true quarterback. Like, when you think of true power play quarterbacks or just defensemen that really quarterback the entire team's offense, you're thinking about guys like Duncan Keith. Wow. You're talking about guys like Brent Burns, and Hampus Lindholm has that ability. I don't know if he ever gets 60 points, but he'll certainly be a guy that gets you 40 points every year and plays 23 plus minutes a game.
And more importantly, gets the puck out of his own zone. He puts it onto the talented forwards that the Ducks have. I mean, Hampus Lindholm is a tremendous defenseman who's also going to get paid. When it comes to, you know, finally coming to agreement on the RFA. We'll cycle back to this after our next interview when we come back after the commercial. Josh Cooper, he's an editor with Yahoo's Puck Daddy. He already
hanging with Cooper.
Me. We're hanging with Mr. Cooper. He's texted me already. He's excited. Josh is going to make an appearance here on the program. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the program. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Josh Cooper of Yahoo Sports' Puck Daddy blog. Josh, I was saying this to Ezzy earlier in the program that, you know, if you, you know, used to come to through Winnipeg a few times a year in your course of your duties with the Nashville Predators, ever since you've moved to Los Angeles, you're big-timing Winnipeg now. You don't make your trips here nearly as often. But I was saying to Ezzy that when we started the interview, we were going to have to talk to you about coming to Winnipeg because, we have the Illegal Curve sandwich at Bernstein's Deli. And as you were waiting on hold, I get a text from you that says, you guys are sponsored by a place called Bernstein's Deli with about 8 question marks. So is this now going to be the impetus to get you back to Winnipeg, a place you speak so highly of? You know, we'll take you out. Bernstein's Deli sandwiches on Ezzy for all of us. Are we going to see Josh Cooper back in Winnipeg and at Bernstein's Deli this coming NHL season?
Well, it's funny because ever since I started working at Puck Daddy, I've been looking for reasons to go to Winnipeg, just any little reason. And the problem is that the Jets just haven't gotten past the first round of the playoffs nor even won a game in the playoffs. So I think that now with the outdoor game coming, there may be a pretty good chance you could see me in October because I love Winnipeg, and I may or may not have volunteered right away to cover that game, but we'll see. Who knows? But
and Josh, it's not going to be that cold that time of year either, so you're not even going to have to bring your Canada Goose jacket.
But, I mean, and granted, like, I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, how the chips may fall. I mean, but as you know, I do love Winnipeg. I love the cold. I love it when it's not that cold, too. I love it when it's Arctic cold. I love it when it's warm. I love everything about your city. I really do. And it's basically because of the comfort and company that you guys have brought me every time I come to the city. And the fact that you guys also really, really get hockey and know how to speak about hockey in the great area of Winnipeg. You guys are like a quadruple threat.
Wait till you.
I love hanging out with you.
And wait till you sink your teeth into an Illegal Curve sandwich from Bernstein's Deli. Then you might even.
What's in the sandwich?
What's that? What's in the sandwich? Oh, well, that's a good thing that you ask. It's a juicy chicken schnitzel, cheddar cheese. It's very kosher, let me tell you. Fried onion and all beef salami between two pieces of grilled buttered rye bread.
Wow.
It is.
That sounds really good, actually. I really want to have that. That's tasty.
I'm telling you.
That's a really good. Who created that? Was that your boy Richie before he big timed everyone and went to go work with the Panthers? Or
we don't know who this Richie you speak about. We don't speak about him on the program anymore.
We're actually legally not allowed to speak about Richie.
Yeah, we actually have he has a restraining order against us. You know, when he told us he was leaving the show, he said, you know, guys, I'm leaving the show. I got this opportunity with the Panthers, and here's a restraining order, so you never talk to me ever again. It was sort of rude of him, if you ask me. But
I have a question for you guys about that. If the Panthers play the Jets in the Stanley Cup final, what will you do? Who will you root for?
Well, Josh, we are impartial journalists, so we only root for the story. We don't root for one team or the other.
True.
Personally, I'm just always going to root against Richard. That's, you know, what the basis of our friendship has been for the last 30 years, is just making sure, you know, we are Seinfeld personified. It's all about me. I don't really give a damn about any of my friends. If I have to step over them to get my own success, that's perfectly fine.
Josh, the worst part about all this is that Richie left me with Drew.
you guys are the best.
Anyways, Josh, so that's something you can look forward to. Hopefully you'll make it here to Winnipeg in October. And we'll, like I said, Legal Curve sandwiches on us. Want to talk about some hockey, because I'm not sure how much of our audience would appreciate an entire 15-minute segment about delis and us kibitzing.
I think you'd be surprised.
You might be surprised. That's assuming, of course, we have an audience to begin with. But, you're based in Los Angeles now, and so I want to start with the Los Angeles Kings. You know, obviously a playoff team last year after not making the playoffs two seasons ago. But I look at this Kings team and I'm not sure that they are trending in the right direction. Am I wrong? Am I off base on that comment?
No, I don't think you're off base with that. When I look at the team and basically you have to look at the Milan Lucic trade. And they gave up Martin Jones, who ended up being a starting goalie on a Stanley Cup final team, and a guy who I'm pretty sure got Conn Smythe votes, even though his team lost. They gave up Martin Jones and a first-round pick and got Milan Lucic, who played one season, got him to the playoffs, and then they couldn't re-sign him because of their cap situation, then he went to Edmonton. That's a really difficult situation to swallow for the LA Kings. And granted, when you're in a win-now mode, you have to make deals like that, but that really didn't work out. And I'm not saying that put the organization back for years, but everything about the NHL right now is about asset management and how you can turn one aging asset or a type of asset that you have to trade because of contracts or whatever, how you can turn that into a different asset. And basically, they took two big chips in Martin Jones and a first-round pick and got a guy they ended up only having for a year, and then he ended up leaving. And he was pretty good with the team, but he wasn't anything special or anything like that. So now you're in a spot where I think in the long term, guys, they're going to trend upward because I think they saw some of these mistakes to try to stay on top after those two Cups. Because when you look at those two Cup teams, they're both fantastically built. They were both just very good up and down their lineup. I think they made some mistakes to try to stay on top, and they were mistakes. And because they were mistakes, they ended up working out. So I think they're going to go back to building to the draft, and they're going to go back to all the things they did well with player development. But right now, it's going to be, I don't want to say a transitional year, but it could be a year where they don't win the division. Maybe they don't make because they haven't won the division really much at all in their history, but still, I mean, they won't challenge for the division. They may make the playoffs. They may not make some noise, but still with this team, you have Andrei Kopitar, who is top 10 player in the league. You have Drew Doughty, won the Norris Trophy. You have Jonathan Quick, who, despite some of people kind of bashing his underlying numbers, to me is still the best big game goal in the NHL. And you have a really good value contract in Jake Muzzin, who I think is a really good defense. So overall, I think they're okay. But I agree with you guys. They're not exactly trending in the right direction. I think that this year, especially as they try to kind of restock the cupboard a bit and try to get some younger players back, I guess some younger assets on entry-level deals, I think you're going to see it's somewhat of a transition year for them. And I think it may be pretty tough for them just in general.
Josh, Jimmy Vesey signed with the New York Rangers yesterday, finally ending the hashtag VC sweepstakes. I guess first part of a two-part question, were you surprised that Jimmy VC signed with the New York Rangers as opposed to the Chicago Blackhawks, Toronto Maple Leafs, or Boston Bruins, or one of the other 22 teams that were trying to sign him? And second part of that question, have we not learned anything from Justin Schultz in 2012?
That's a really good point. And I may kind of harp on the first part first, because I think that's the biggest lesson, is that these guys have never played an NHL game. And you can scout them as much as you want, but it creates such a ridiculous expectation level on them that I almost feel like, unless they're superstars, and a lot of these college players end up being pretty good players, but a lot of them just aren't 40, 50 goal type players like a Phil Kessel or a Patrick Kane. It'll never equal to what the hype is this time of year. And I think the other issue too is that at this time of the season, or this the off season, if you will, there's not a whole heck of a lot going on. And they are the only story. And because of that, the hype level goes extreme. Now, when you look at VZ and you ask, I'm surprised the Rangers and the Blackhawks, or I guess you picked the Rangers. Rangers and the Blackhawks were reported as the two favorites, I think. I forgot who reported it, but it was the end of July. I like to give credit to whoever reports this stuff, but the end of July. And it's kind of funny to me how they ended up being the two finalists to get him, even after they met with, I think they said, eight teams overall and went through the whole dog and pony show or whatever. So I found that kind of fascinating. The other thing, too, that I found really fascinating about how this took on a life of its own, and I think this goes against the expectation level, is in New York, you had guys like Jerry Ferreira, the actor from Entourage, tweeting at him. You had Boomer Esiason, who's former NFL quarterback, huge local personality on radio, tweeting at him. You had Noah Syndergaard, the pitcher of the New York Mets, tweeting at him. There were some rumors that Liam Neeson was in a pitch video that the Rangers put together for this kid. I mean, this is crazy. You know what it's like? I used to cover University of Alabama football, and it's almost like National Signing Day without the crazy NCAA rules. That's what it was. And I jokingly said to someone last night, I was like, it would have been great if he had all 30 NHL hats and did a big photo op of him, like, choosing the Rangers hat or whatever and putting it on and doing a photo. I mean, that's what it almost felt like to me. So I kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but there's just a lot of really bizarre, fascinating elements that went with VZ Watch. That ended, I mean, it could have only ended with the report of a video with Liam Neeson doing a line from Taken to try to get Jimmy Vesey to go there. That's the only way it could have ended.
Josh Cooper's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Josh's work from Yahoo's Puck Daddy blog. Josh, what do you make of Patrick Waugh taking his, coaching clipboard and going home in the middle of August? Probably one of the more bizarre stories from a time where there's usually no news whatsoever in the hockey world is randomly Patrick Waugh decides now is the time where the straw has broken the camel's back and he can't operate within the confines of the Colorado Avalanche organization anymore.
Very weird situation overall, just because he said he'd been mulling it for a few weeks. Sounds like he wasn't too on board with a lot of the free agent decisions that they made this summer. I think he wanted to see wholesale changes with the team, and really, basically, all they ended up doing is re-signing a bunch of guys, but that's what you got to do. I mean, when you have guys who are up for contracts and they're important guys like Tyson Barrie or Nathan MacKinnon, you have to re-sign them and try to fill in some holes. And I think maybe one of these with Colorado is their cap seems like they're kind of snug up against the cap right now, which is tough when you're a team like that that hasn't made the playoffs in 2 years and you're that close to the salary cap. Generally, I kind of equate that with teams that are they're making the playoffs. But from a media perspective, I'm pretty sad, only because I really like just sort of the story of Patrick Waugh. I like the fact that he was there and he was entertaining and he gave us really funny quotes sometimes. And I mean, the one thing I've heard just from people around the NHL is that Patrick Waugh, like, he's known as a hard-headed guy. And this is from other coaches, but he really did try to learn. He did try to pick other coaches' brains about how to do things systematically, how to get better, and he was always trying to. And I don't know how that really ended up playing out, but I think one of the issues, too, is that in the media, he was just easy to poke and he was easy to kind of push because he seemed to not have an understanding of advanced stats, and that kind of went back several years to just lots of comments he made. But he was entertaining and he was fun and he was a story for me, and that's all I could really ever ask for.
Josh, you covered the Nashville Predators for many years for the Tennessean newspaper, and they were arguably one of the most active teams, maybe most successful teams in this past offseason. Of course, trading for PK Subban, sending Shea Weber to the Montreal Canadiens, but also re-signing Philip Forsberg to that contract extension, picking up Matt Carl on a nice one-year contract. Do you think David Poile maybe had the best offseason of any GM in the NHL? And do you think the Nashville Predators are now finally a legitimate Stanley Cup contender?
I'm going to say no, only because of how Steve Yzerman was able to keep Steven Stamkos and then lock up assets long-term. I think that he had arguably the toughest lot going into the offseason, and then was able to very much do what he wanted to do and did it very well. But your question about the Nashville Predators, so I will talk about David Poile. And he also was able to, he had an offseason game plan. He went about it. He did a very good job. And I think one of the things that he was able to do was by getting rid of Shea Weber's contract with some of those crazy bonuses. And I know that they had kind of come to it sort of an end, but they still had a few years where they had to make lump sum payments to Shea Weber on July 1st, and big lump sum payments too, is that it got him out of this crazy real dollar pay structure that few, if no teams in the NHL had to deal with, and got him back to doing what he does best, which is planning long-term, signing players to common sense deals, making shrewd trades, and that's what he did. And that's David Poile at his best. That's when David Poile is doing the things that make him a successful general manager, and that's what enabled him to make some of these trades and put the Predators in a type of long-term planning structure along with a short-term window of opportunity that I think puts them in a really decent spot. So I think he did a really good job. As far as the Subban-Weber trade, I do personally think that's going to be a lot closer than people realize. Everyone basically called it a major win for Nashville right off the bat. I think that at least in the first couple of years, Shea Weber is going to be absolute dynamite for the Montreal Canadiens because he's just a fantastic hockey player who's really hard to play against. The other thing too, guys, I know you're Canadian, but Shea Weber got picked for Team Canada and PK Subban, I believe, didn't.
That's true.
I mean, doesn't that count for something to some degree? I mean, they can pick anyone they want and they go with certain guys. I mean, how do people in Canada look at that? I just find that fascinating overall because I basically look at Team Canada as the best of the best.
In Canada, we just like to scream and not listen to anybody, so it's easier that way. You know, if we just all scream into the echo chamber, nobody ever has any rational discussions.
True. But I think Shea Weber, I mean, he was picked over PK Subban for Team Canada. That should count for something. Now, granted, it's a short tournament. It's not like they're looking at his salary cap hit long term and his age and whatever, which I think is better from a PK Subban perspective. But again, I think in the short term, this is going to play out very evenly. I think in the long term is where the deal changes. But overall, I personally think it's a great trade for both teams. I really do.
Josh Cooper is an editor for Yahoo's Puck Daddy blog. Josh, any truth to the rumor that Wyshynski was in the cab with Lochte and the other American swimmers in Rio? That's, you know, what I'm hearing behind the scenes.
No. I don't think that was the case. I mean, he's done a fantastic job covering the games from Rio, wrote some really big stories, wrote some really, really interesting content. I highly recommend following him as the games wind down here. He's done a phenomenal job for us.
There you go. The Yahoo guys, they're multi-talented, both in working the Summer Olympics and the hockey beat.
So, Josh, you haven't lost your wallet then?
No, I'm looking at it right now.
There you go. That's good.
That's good.
Yeah, dodge that bullet.
It's definitely here. And yeah, as you guys know, I'm a huge fan of the TV shows The Bachelor and The Bachelorette.
Yes.
And that's the only thing I'm really sad about is I was pretty sure we wanted to get Richie on the show, but also I have no idea what his dating life is like right now.
He's not a bachelor. He certainly has a paramour at the moment, so he's not eligible for the show.
Well, then he's not. But anyway, I like train wreck TV shows, as you guys know. And the Lochte thing is like a train wreck. I just can't turn away from it. I mean, I watch it, I'm like, okay, this may not even really be news or a story to some degree just because of how ridiculous it is. But I can't stop watching it because it's just so crazy.
What? He's just
and Lochte.
He's just so stupid. He's just, I mean.
Did you guys up in Canada, were you familiar with his reality TV show from a few years ago?
I knew it existed. I didn't pay that much attention to it. I mean, I certainly paid much more attention to Ryan Lochte in the last 10 days than I would really ever prefer to. I mean, you know, for a guy who really didn't do much at these Olympics, I mean, he, you know, and he's always been in Michael Phelps' shadow. I mean, he's, you know, somebody described him, and I think it was online or might have even been my wife. I mean, he's America's Labradoodle, and that's a fairly accurate portrayal of just how stupid he is.
Well, and the other thing, too, I don't understand is, okay, so if he, some of the theories I've read is that he's doing this to get some more, because he's addicted to fame and wants to get some more fame out of this.
Sure.
Well, if his long-term goal is to get a reality TV show, he had one already, and it was really, really unwatchable. I actually tried watching it, because I find him to just be a really hilarious character, and I couldn't even watch it. And I really like reality TV shows, like really bad ones, and I couldn't get through it.
Well,
so it's a very confusing thing, but I can't stop watching. It's a train wreck. I can't stop.
Give him 5 minutes, and he's going to be dating one of the Kardashians. I don't know, Kendall or Kylie, or they. I don't know if they're the young ones, or Kim or Courtney. I know way too many Kardashian names is really what this boils down to.
Oh, that would be something. Well, then they'll be back on reality TV.
Exactly.
But then their ratings will drop, and then maybe they'll lose their show if he goes on.
God.
That was a low blow. I'm just kidding. But really, his show was not very good. It was. I tried rewatching some clips recently after this whole thing broke, just to try to jog my memory about the guy, and it was just as bad now as it was 3 years ago.
Well, Josh Cooper, the editor for Yahoo's Puck Daddy, obviously he likes train wreck television, and by appearing on this program, it's obvious that he likes train wreck radio as well. Josh, thanks for doing this, buddy.
All right, thanks for having me on, guys. I look forward to eating that sandwich.
Josh, buy a plane ticket to Winnipeg. Do it. Do it right now.
We'll see you in October,
so
hopefully.
Excited.
That's it. Right, thanks, later, Josh. Guys. Take care, buddy. It's head to break, one final segment. It'll be a short one. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
A very short final segment this Saturday morning. A big thank you to Josh Cooper from Puck Daddy for joining us. Also earlier in the show, Brendan Leipzig of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization and Gord Wilson, the Ottawa Senators color analyst on TSN 1200. In case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. If you missed any, or pardon me, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big ups to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For my colleague, analyst Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Blue Jays Baseball, coming up later tonight on TSN 1290. Stay tuned for Best Of with our good friend Joel Marcoux coming up next on this fine radio station.